Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, so much has happened in the NFL since we last podcasted, and the last time we recorded, I felt like a ton had happened. So this has just been a crazy offseason, and I have a theory about it that I want to run by you that sort of, I think, might inform a little bit about why this is happening and also why it might keep happening. And I want to get your take on it. Here's my theory. I think we're seeing the first wave of general managers across the league who have grown up native to both fantasy sports and Madden. So you've basically got GMs in the league who are like our age or younger. It's rare that there are old GMs anymore. Like Rick Spielman up with you guys, you know, when y'all let him go, he was one of the last kind of old school GMs. And so you've got this rash of young GMs across the league. They grew up native to fantasy. They grew up native to Madden. And, you know, I think they see players more as assets than like, I don't know, real people, for lack of a better term, even though like all the rhetoric is about how they're real people.
I think there's a third factor in this, and that is analytics, which, yeah. And I don't mean that in sort of like the old man grumpy analytics, but just the looking at football through the realm of primarily numbers. Yeah. So for example, you look at a player versus his dollar value, a player versus his career arc, you know, so if you can get, you basically want running backs for their first contract and that's it, that kind of thing, because of what the numbers say. So yeah, I agree with you. I think on the fantasy sports, on the Madden, where transactions are everything and you're just plugging in the top talent. And then you have analytics where you just look at guys and you're like, we love this guy, not worth the money. There are no emotional signings.
Yeah, that's right. And if you grow up in this Madden and fantasy saturated universe, like making the deals and acquiring players is the funnest part. Like playing the season is sort of second
tier.
Yeah,
you simulate the season so you can go make trades and build a roster.
That's right. And there's such an emphasis even in the media cycle now, Pipe, on the offseason. And we've talked about this before, how brilliant the NFL is in terms of, you know, keeping it hot for all 12 months of the calendar year and making things that may or may not be actually newsworthy. This was an off the charts year of that, just with Deshaun stuff and all the things happening player movement wise in the league. So let's talk about a couple of these. Let's just start with the Deshaun thing. That's probably like the lead in terms of the biggest thing that's happened since the last time we talked. I want to go at this from the perspective of, well, let me ask you this first. Do you have any Cleveland Browns fans in your life?
Yeah, I have a few.
I do too. How have your Browns fans responded to this? Like, what's been the sort of psychological gymnastics that they've had to do to be excited about this?
I mean, it was immediate excitement. And then I know that that kind of thing where they sort of, but they showed their hand immediately.
Yeah, just, they all become
kind of,
wait,
we got a top five quarterback? Pay him anything.
Yeah, exactly. And they all become kind of legal experts, right? They all become like Wolf Blitzer, like Greta Van Susteren, and you're getting links to like, well, this is the actual meaning of indictment, you know, and they're trying to figure this thing out. And they're,
he's been cleared of all criminal charges, those kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how my guys have been too. That's been one aspect of it. The other aspect, and I want to talk about this and also the Deshaun on the field stuff. The other aspect of it has been how quickly emotionally they've gone from loving Baker Mayfield and, oh my gosh, he's gritty, he's fiery, he plays hurt, you know, people love him. You know, he's rallied us to some amazing victories. They go from that to like, I hate this guy. He's immature. We got to get rid of him, you know, sell him for anything. Like the emotional flip-flop on Baker Mayfield has been fascinating. And I think Browns fans, more than any other fan base, have sort of bought into the fantasyification of like roster work from year to year. I would say there's never been.
Well, what else did they have to hang their hat on for like 20 years?
Well, that's true.
It was number one draft picks, and then it was asset collection, and then it was roster building, etc.
Right. They've been winning the off seasons. They've had the off season championship belt the last few years. But I mean, look at it. They're on their second batch of like all-star team wide receiving corps. You know, the first one didn't work out. They're allegedly like all-star team defense didn't work out. I don't know. It's interesting to be a Browns fan in this moment, because you could make the argument that the roster is appreciably worse than it was last year. Apart from the Deshaun thing, who we don't even know if he's going to be on the field that much this upcoming season. So where are you at on the Browns pipe?
I think they are one of the most, they're probably one of the highest variance teams in football right now, because because I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun is suspended for a good chunk of the year, probably rightfully so. You know, the NFL probably needs to put a, setting aside whatever their moral obligation is, there's sort of a sense of like, we need to take definitive action now that the thing is defined in court, and punish this guy so that we can move on as a league. And that's setting aside all thoughts of what he may or may not have done, which I don't want to get into. Let's assume he's suspended for half or all of the season.
Yeah.
Which, by the way they wrote that contract is just a big middle finger to the league. You know, did you see it where he's guaranteed $1 million this year and like $45 million for the 5 years following or something like that?
Right. Yeah, it's fascinating. And again, the Browns fans in my life were like, oh my gosh, this is so smart. And then I hate to be the well actually guy. And I hate to be, let's do a minute on this. I hate to be the wet blanket, but I sort of found myself wanting to be the wet blanket a little bit with Browns fans. And I don't want to get on some moral high horse here, but he's currently, okay? Like, currently he's a very hard guy to get excited about. And he's gotten a wide berth from the media. I think the media has really kid-gloved him, you know? And the media is in this kind of Sophie's Choice of, do we make it about race or do we make it about gender? And as a result, I don't know. You know, he's kind of gotten a wide berth so far.
Well, and the fact is you have to make it about one of those things. Although I've heard gender 9 times out of 10, which I think is probably appropriate in this case.
I think it probably is.
Given the accusations against him.
But
you have to make it about those before you make it about football. The thing that we are not at the point where we can say, let's talk about how this affects the Browns. I have not heard anybody analyze how he works in Kevin Stefanski's offense, for example, despite the fact that I think that's what all the football fans want to get to. We just kind of we're like, all right, well, we haven't checked off all of our moral obligations on this one yet.
Yeah. So let me ask you that. How do you think he's going to work? Let's say he's suspended for half the season. Okay. Which I think is probably kind of best case scenario, for the Browns. From a football standpoint, is he's only out half the season. I think a really interesting storyline becomes, what if like Colt McCoy or Case Keenum or whoever their backup is, like,
didn't they sign Brissett?
Yes, they have Brissett. That's it. My bad on that one.
Which was also interesting, because by signing Brissett, you're 100% saying Baker's not playing here next year. We got our guy. Right. We got our backup to our guy. The guy we drafted first overall is leaving.
Yeah. I guess I have a pretty low view of Jacoby Brissett. So the thing that I was going to say was, what if the backup just plays his tail off and has like a career 8-game run, making it hard to put Deshaun in? I don't know. Like, so I enjoy those scenarios.
I think Jacoby Brissett's time with the Colts showed us that.
That's not going to happen.
Well, yeah, but like, he could go 4-4 in those games.
Yeah, he could.
Because
he definitely could.
I think their defense is strong.
Yeah.
They have a great offensive line. one of the best running backs in the NFL. And at his best, Brissett is a adequate game manager. So let's say they go 4-4. Watson comes back for the stretch run. Granted, he hasn't played football in 2 years. So what's he going to look like? Because, I mean, is it 2 years, year and a half? I don't know. It's been a long, long time.
Yeah, at least a year and a half. And it's not like he can be, when he's suspended, it's not like he can be in the building. He's not like a normal player rehabbing an injury, watching tape, doing the whole thing. So
I realize this is a waste of other top level talent, but part of me thinks, going back to that Madden fantasy roster building extravaganza, that you just slow play Watson this year. So if he's suspended for the whole year, it probably works in the Browns' favor, because then next year they get Watson and a high draft pick.
Yeah.
To add to an already solid roster.
Yeah.
Now the problem is you've wasted a year of Myles Garrett. You've wasted a year of Nick Chubb. You've spent a lot of money on not winning. So maybe that's not an option for them. But but boy, would it set him up well for next year. And as far as how he fits in Stefanski's offense, like everybody fits in Stefanski's offense, because it's basically,
that's kind of the point of it.
Play action and then well-designed passing plays to get guys open, you know, downfield. And a quarterback like Watson makes all the receivers better. He also makes the running backs better because he has to be paid attention to. So, you know, Nick Chubb is going to have a little more room and a little more time, which is a dangerous thing. So, it's hard not to see them being a really explosive offense if he's in shape and healthy and playing, you know, post-suspension, whatever that suspension is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. I think I'm a little bit less bullish on their offensive line than you are. You know, they're okay at tackle. Jedrick Wills maybe hasn't been amazing. He's serviceable. They lost their center. Did they replace J.C. Treader with anybody noteworthy yet?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Let me ask you this, Pipe. Because I think this is a fascinating storyline, and I think it's been underreported. And I think there's still upside to this storyline. What becomes of Baker Mayfield? I think he would be a really interesting dice roll for a handful of teams that are still up in the air at quarterback. And I'm kind of curious as to why it's not happening, unless he's just like an impossible person in the clubhouse. Your thoughts on Baker?
I mean, I think we know exactly what Baker is, and he fits in that category of quarterback who's adequate NFL starter. You know, does not make the team go. Rather, the team has to be going for him to kind of navigate this thing. Okay, it's a little bit like when I was like 5 years old. My dad or my grandpa would take me out on my grandpa's property in Georgia. They had a big pecan orchard, and we would drive like the tractor or the old station wagon around, and I would steer, but he would do the pedals.
And so.
Baker is me at 5 years old steering the station wagon. Like, he's, if somebody else is making this thing go, he can kind of navigate it okay.
Yeah.
So, which is to say, he'd probably be a good fit in like Carolina or Seattle, unless they just want a tank and have a high pick. He's going to be one of those guys who, he probably falls into the Teddy Bridgewater career arc.
Yeah.
Except that he does not have the attitude of Teddy Bridgewater. Everybody wants Teddy on their team. Apparently nobody wants Baker on their team.
Yeah, it's really interesting, man. Like, I don't know. I look at a team like New Orleans, and New Orleans is kind of doing the we're positive about Jameis thing again. And I don't know. I guess I'd rather have Baker than Jameis. I'd rather have Baker. This is going to be an unpopular take, but I think I'd rather have Baker than Jalen Hurts, in the sense that when Baker is healthy, he had two really good seasons, and he's had two really terrible seasons when he's played through stuff. So you look at that body of work and you look at some of the games and some of the wins and go, this guy can be really dynamic and effective when, as you said, the pieces are in place around him. So Baker is he's an interesting case study in watching the games, right? So let's do a watch the games thing and compare Baker and Kirk Cousins, mm-hmm. who I want to hear your emotions about. But so if you look at the stats, you go Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
He's the guy, right? But if you actually watch the games, depending on what games you're watching, you might take Baker.
Well, and the difference between those two guys is that I think they're probably pretty equivalent quarterbacks overall, which means that both. Baker is better than Teddy Bridgewater. When I said that, when I gave that example, sure. I was talking about career arc of what he's not going to get a huge quarterback 5-year contract from some team. I don't think ever.
Right.
Maybe he will, but. So I just mean he's going to get like the 2-year stopgap starter thing, but he's better than that. So yeah. Cousins is a much steadier hand than Baker is.
Yeah.
Baker will make plays that Cousins won't even try.
That's
one of the most
thing.
Aggravating yeah. things about Kirk Cousins is everything fits in an exact box. He will not throw a guy open. He will not like scramble around and make plays. He just steadfastly refuses to take risks despite having guys like Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson mm-hmm. who can dominate their opponents. And so he leaves plays on the field, which is also why one thing like when he's under pressure, when he's rattled, he gets worse. And Baker just doesn't give an F about any of that stuff. So he comes out and makes some really dumb plays that hurts the team, but also will try stuff. And so the net result is probably pretty equivalent. You end up with an occasional playoff team and about a 500 team because it all averages out.
Yeah, no, that's right. Cousins is your classic like Pro Football Reference quarterback. You know, if you're digging into the stats and you know, maybe he's emblematic of the analytics driven era that we're in, where if your world is numbers more than your world is film, you're talking yourself into it year after year. And speaking of talking yourself into it, you have a Kirk Cousins emotional status update for us, Piper. And I'm reading some things into your text, okay? And one of the things that I'm reading in is maybe you've talked yourself into it a little bit. Where are you at on that?
Okay, so the text I sent you was, I want to discuss how I'm making peace with the Kirk Cousins situation. The key word here is situation.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like Kirk Cousins as the Vikings quarterback. It makes me just kind of ugh, constantly.
Yep.
So the situation is this. They signed him to an extension again, and immediate reactions by all the fans who don't like him, myself included, was like, why would they do this? This is the dumbest thing. Well, it did two things. It lowered his cap number this year, and it lowered his cap number next year to a realm of like low to mid 30s instead of mid 40s. So that's good for the roster now. It also gives flexibility to get rid of him in the future because it's easier to trade $35 million than $45 million. So the other piece of it that I've made peace with is that the only reason I wanted to get rid of Cousins is because I would have liked somebody else who kind of played the role better. Kirk was paid like a top five quarterback and plays like a middle third quarterback.
Sure.
So if he's paid like a middle third quarterback, I don't dislike him as much.
Yeah.
Or if he plays like a top five, I love him forever and ever. And and so I was like, can we just get a guy who's paid according to his play?
Yeah.
The problem is you can't when you already have him signed. And so the alternative was trade him for garbage.
Yeah.
And then draft Kenny Pickett? No thanks. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I don't. So, and there was a lot of Vikings fans who were like, we need to, you know, tear it down to the studs and rebuild this team because we're just running it back again. When was the last time that worked in the NFL?
Right.
Nobody tears it down to the studs and then successfully rebuilds easily.
See also the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been in this for a decade.
Yes. Yeah. They were the vacant lot with like stud walls for 20 straight years before finally somebody mm-hmm. was like, let's just, we're going to put some money into talent. And they lucked into a couple first overall picks and different things. And now they're adequate. They're still not great, but they're like a real football team. They're about as good as the Vikings after all of that.
Yeah.
So it makes sense not to tear it down. And
and
the third thing is there's a new GM. Everybody wanted to see like a brand new start. And I was like, honestly, I think it makes sense for him to come in and start to clean up around the edges, evaluate the talent that's there, figure out what's working. And I would be next year is the year that I would anticipate bigger changes. So if Kevin O'Connell, the new head coach, and Adolfo Mensah, the GM, don't like Cousins after this year, he won't be there next year.
Right.
But so I have talked myself into, okay, they didn't make drastic moves, which are fun from an emotional perspective, but risky and probably stupid.
Yeah.
And they've put themselves in a position where they can build a team that if they swap quarterbacks next year, that guy is coming into a better position. So I'm not happy with it, but they were never going to be a Super Bowl contender anyway, I don't think.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm making peace with it. I'm generally okay. I can stomach Kirk for another year knowing that it's, if he's awesome, I will like him more. If he's not awesome, he probably won't be here any longer.
Yeah. I look forward to a world where we no longer have to talk about him. This has gone on way too long.
Yes.
You know, it really has been like the broken record.
Do you know why we're talking about him? I mean, aside from the fact that I'm a Vikings fan, so I'm forced to, it's because he's the best agent in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. He's in the contract Hall of Fame for sure. He's getting a gold jacket.
Yeah. The man has been overpaid for his performance more than any other player in NFL history, I think.
Yeah. It's remarkable. And it's really kind of on brand for him in terms of, just all that stuff. But it'll be an interesting pipe, you know, and I think you're right. You know, something drastic could have happened in a universe where this year's quarterback draft class was what we thought it was going to be going into last football season, right? So, you could have seen something more drastic at that position. But I think you're right. I think the Vikings have a clean it up around the edges kind of roster, and that was probably the smart play.
Well, the other piece is that I think the rest of the division is still pretty weak, and so they may as well take one last shot at wild card or division championship. Yes, the Packers brought back Rodgers, but they traded Adams. And so now their offense is pretty weak.
They're in a net negative for the offseason for sure.
And
so they've gotten worse. The Bears are still a disaster.
Well, we don't know what the Bears are because they have a new coach. They have a quarterback they drafted last year who was just almost ruined in his first season. I really hope Fields bounces back because I love it when young quarterbacks turn good. The Lions are, that's what happens when you try to rebuild from the, tear it down to the studs. So this is
okay,
why we don't
do 2 minutes
Vikings.
On the Lions. And maybe this is me doing like, I want to believe in it stuff with the Lions. But they are a tear it down to the studs team who, if some things go right, I think they could be kind of frisky and kind of interesting in that they have one of the best offensive lines in the league, and they're all young. They've got to do something at guard, but they can address that in the draft. They've got a Pro Bowl tight end, brought in DJ Chark to go with Amon-Ra St. Brown, two really good running backs when they're healthy. Jared Goff to kind of caretake. I don't love Jared Goff, of course. Jared Goff's not the piece that you're getting excited about. They were kind of they kind of found some frisky like pass rush toward the end. They invested in the interior part of the D line last year. They got to come up with some answers in the secondary. I've still got my Jeff Okuda shares.
He was
from
injured
3 years
most of
ago
last year, right?
Yeah, he tore his Achilles. And if Okuda comes back and gives them anything, Oruwariye was really good for them last year. They got to figure something out at safety. I don't know. They could be decent in a world where, let's say, the Packers just kind of see the wheels fall off, right? Because here's the thing about Rodgers and the Packers. If it goes south, let's say over the first half of the season, it really goes south, he's going to... He's not going to be a bootstraps guy who's going to sort of put the team on his back yeah, emotionally.
He's the opposite of good soldier.
Yeah, he's the opposite of good soldier. Like, if it goes bad, it's going to go really bad. Chicago's going to be terrible. I don't know. I could kind of envision a world in which the Lions are interesting this year.
Well, I agree with that. I think they're interesting from the perspective of they haven't done anything stupid. They haven't misspent their money. They haven't signed guys to too long of contracts. They didn't like re-up Jared Goff for an insane amount of money. They can absorb his overly high contract, and it didn't hurt the team because I think it's only one more year. So they are set up well so that, let's say, they're a bottom five team again, which they probably will be. Next year's draft class is supposed to be stronger at quarterback. Yeah. So let's say they get the dude out of Ohio State or whoever is coming out, dude out of Alabama. And all of a sudden, one of those guys is like this year's Justin Herbert or, you know, that kind of thing, where all of a sudden they, or Josh Allen or somebody who, like, they get that guy, they have the foundation for that guy to step into an actual professional football team.
Right.
Which you couldn't say about the Lions 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say about like Carolina right now for the most part. There's just a few, you know, I think they are doing smart things because they're not overreaching and misunderstanding their time frame.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think their biggest risk is that Goff actually plays really well and they win too many games. Now, I don't think it's likely.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
Yeah, no, I agree. I want to run one more Lions-related thing by you and get your take on it. I think they have one of the only coaches with a personality in the league currently. Can you think of another coach in the NFL right now that has a personality? Like, I think Belichick has a persona. And I think Kyle Shanahan has a persona.
Pete Carroll,
you know, Shanahan's
close. But he doesn't wear his emotions on his sleeve, but it's only like one note.
Who's this?
Pete Carroll.
Oh, Pete Carroll. Yeah. No, you're right. It's one note with Pete Carroll. Shanahan's kind of like, you know, a little bit flat brim, hipster. You know, same thing with Cliff Kingsbury. You know, Belichick's kind of the surly, you know, professor type.
McVay is football robot.
Yeah, McVay's football robot.
Why am I forgetting his name? Washington, are they the Commanders now? The Washington pretend football team. Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera has a personality, I think.
What a disastrous team, though.
Like, no kidding.
What a disastrous team. Like, doubling down on Carson Wentz. This must be sort of like an NFC East hangover for Ron Rivera, where he was like, I hated coaching against Carson Wentz that one year that he was good. So I'm doubling down on it. I don't know. This is bizarre to me.
Yeah. I think for coaches to have personality, dude in Miami, McDaniel.
Oh yeah. He's got a bit of a personality.
Yeah. We'll see if it gets polished off of him, but I think he's a character who speaks his mind. But I think for coaches to have personality, it's going to be one of two things. They either need to be old enough to kind of predate social media native.
Yeah, right.
Or young enough that they've grown up in it and learned how to be themselves in that realm. So, like, that's McDaniel. He's he's like 24 or something. And
exactly.
And then
he was in college too.
Quinn,
years ago.
The Lions coach, is like, he's not old, but he kind of has boomer tendencies about him in a likable way where he's just like,
absolutely
just gruff, speaks from the heart, pours his emotions out on his sleeve. And it's, but the guys in the middle are the social media natives who have learned how to be kind of polished, shined, muted, like
boring robots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of boring robots, Tom Brady's coming back. That's probably all we need to say about that.
Yeah. The de facto head coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks. I was going to say Bruce Arians had a personality until he was no longer a head coach.
Or at least had a Kangol hat, which looks like a personality.
Yeah, and he was a bit of a loose cannon in the pressers. Like, he wasn't afraid to, you know, do a Brady drive-by every now and then and just, you know, let him have it for something. But, Bruce Arians out, Tom Brady in. Someone else is the head coach on paper, but it's kind of Brady. Let me ask you this about that situation. The public, I would say, football fans in general are kind of vaguely positive about Brady. You know, the people in his fan bases, like the New England people and then now the Tampa people, love him, obviously, because he's brought great success. Is there a world in which there's kind of a boomerang effect to all this with Brady, where he's clearly doing kind of like a big Queen's Gambit? Like, he's playing chess. He's doing the big power grab in Tampa. Is there a scenario in which all that goes south on him and the perception of Brady really tanks? What do you think?
Not as long as he keeps his mouth shut. Like, well, one of two things. If he keeps his mouth shut and just, like, doesn't say anything controversial, which he's really good at, not saying anything, and if he plays decently, like, if he comes back and, you know, sets another, like, this man's 87 years old, look what he's doing with the football, how do we believe this? What is he, 44, 45? I think people will just be like, man, Tom's doing it again. If he comes back and pulls like a, final year Brett Favre kind of thing where you're like, oh, he just doesn't have it. His arm fell off. The Philip Rivers, like, oh, he can throw is lame ducks. Drew Brees, total fade at the end. If that's where he ends up, I don't think people turn on him. I think people are just bored with him. He's been around for 25 years. Like, we're about due to be bored.
Yeah.
But he would have to absolutely sabotage himself with controversy or criminal activity or, like, snorting cocaine on camera for his image. And honestly, that might help his image. People be like, oh, he is interesting. How about that? I don't know.
Right.
It's really hard to imagine him tanking his whole thing.
Yeah, no, it is. The scenario I was thinking through was, what if he grabs too much power? Because I think, and maybe this is just because I have egomaniac tendencies and this is what I would do. Like, first ever kind of player coach, like de facto player head coach. If he leans too hard into that and the team is mediocre, I could see it getting away from him. You know what I mean? Just from a PR standpoint. Because Peyton was sort of the de facto offensive coordinator in Denver at the end. But he was aw shucksy enough to kind of pull it off. And he was Peyton, and he had the Sterling reputation and all that.
I think if Brady did that with Arians, it would go against him. But the fact that it's Raheem Morris, who's not been a good head coach before, he's not young. He's been coaching for a long time, but he's a new head coach. I think everybody just sides with Brady. If things go bad and Brady grabs too much power, they're like, I don't know why the coach isn't just listening to him. That kind of thing. And you know, there would also probably be a race factor there amongst a certain subset of the fans, where Raheem Morris is black, Brady's white, sort of the great white hope of quarterbacks type of thing, and that could be a factor there too.
Yeah, no, it definitely could. Pipe, let's talk about receiver moves. Tons of big receiver moves. I have this, like, I'm coming at this from two directions. One was, I found myself watching the week two matchup between, it was Rodgers versus Jimmy G. So it was Packers Niners. And no disrespect to Jimmy G, who we need to talk about still, but it looked like they were playing a different sport. Like, Rodgers and Davante Adams were like, they were so on the same page. It was kind of like when you were playing football with, like, older kids, and, like, two of the older kids put themselves on the same team and they could just do whatever they wanted and everybody else was super frustrated. That was Rodgers and Davante Adams. So Davante goes to the Raiders. Tyreek Hill obviously goes to Miami. There have been other big receiver moves.
Amari Cooper went to Cleveland.
Amari Cooper to Cleveland. I'm not excited about that one at all.
I think that'll be good for Cleveland because he probably offers about as much as Odell Beckham right now, but, like, with 5% of the
the drama.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure.
He's fine. And he fits well in that offense because he's a great route runner. So it'll be...
Which one of these moves do you think is going to be the biggest bust? Like, there's excitement all around for Devontae going to the Raiders, for Tyreek going to the Fish.
I think Tyreek Hill is the biggest bust? The biggest risk.
Yeah.
Because, A, he's over 30. What is he, 31, 32? Speed
is... he that old, Tyreek?
I think so.
Interesting.
I could be wrong. No, I might be thinking of Devontae, but Tyreek might only be like 28 or 29. You're right. His entire game is built on being the fastest man on the field. So he's a really skilled football player, but the reason he's a top three or four wide receiver is because he's a really skilled, fastest man on the field. Those guys blow a tire, it's bad news. Miami's quarterback situation is way up in the air. I want to believe in Tua. Last year I made the call that I thought he might make like the Josh Allen jump. Way wrong.
So
it's funny. Josh Allen, I should just stop comparing anybody to Josh Allen because I said Josh Allen was going to stink and he became an MVP candidate. I said Tua was going to make the jump and he became what I thought Josh Allen was going to be. And not doing great on those comparisons. So I think Tyreek is going to be... he's going to be the biggest letdown. Like from a fantasy perspective, I would expect like a 20-30% drop in his numbers. Because he doesn't have a top three quarterback putting the ball in his hands 15-20 yards downfield. He has a guy who barely throws 15 or 20 yards downfield. So it's going to be, what can he do after the catch? A lot of slants, lots of screens, lots of, you know, trying to get him on the move, which he's great at. But defenses can adjust to that.
And, you know, they'll see a lot of too high. You know, they have an interesting lineup offensively, though, in that they've kind of got the big slot in Gesicki. They've got Jalen Waddle on the other side. They're going to be hard to cover. But can Tua get the ball there?
Yeah,
can Tua move the ball around?
I think the biggest advantage Tyreek brings to that team is that Jalen Waddle is going to be wide open all the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Because the coverage will have to tilt Tyreek's way. I mean... If Tua if he reaches Baker Mayfield level, Kirk Cousins level of just, which I think that's probably his ceiling at this point, of just sort of like the offense is put together well, he can steer this thing a little bit. Then all of a sudden we're talking about Tyreek and Jalen putting up 1,000-yard seasons, 10 touchdowns, and I look a little bit silly. I just don't have it. I think the risk is higher there. I think Davante Adams and Derek Carr, I think Davante Adams can get open in any offense. He's just one of the most sublime route runners.
Yeah,
put defenders on skates you've ever seen. And I think Derek Carr has proven in the last couple of years with a pretty mediocre receiving cast.
Yeah,
that he can get guys the ball. I don't think he's great, but I think he's underrated.
Yeah, I think Derek Carr is actually going to go bananas this year if the Raiders can figure out their offensive line. I think some guys are going to have career years in that offense, in that you've got to cover Darren Waller. You got to cover now Davante Adams. Hunter Renfro has been an interesting guy.
I mean, Hunter Renfro might have 110 catches this year. Waller had over 100 catches a couple years ago, I think. And that was with nobody else on the field to make life easier for him. So, they still have Josh Jacobs, who is, while not a great running back, you have to take their running game seriously, and they're not afraid to use him. He's also a solid pass catcher. So I think their offense could be a lot of fun this year. I think, is it McDaniels who's their head coach now?
Josh McDaniels.
He's proven over the years that he can run a lot of different kinds of offenses. He knows how to use different kinds of players. He's coached great tight ends. He's coached great slot receivers. He's coached great outside receivers. He's coached Tom Brady, Cam Newton, and Mac Jones. So I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have a really dangerous offense.
Yeah, they're the AFC West team that everybody's kind of sleeping on. I'm not drinking the Denver Kool-Aid. I just can't get there yet. I'm not as bullish on Russell Wilson as I think a lot of people are. I'm not drinking the San Diego Kool-Aid. I realize they made some big splashy moves. They bring in JC Jackson.
Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack, which, what does Khalil Mack have left in the tank? I don't know.
Mack has a lot more left in the tank when he's lined up across from Bosa than when he's lined up across from whoever the mess that the Bears have been running out there for the last 6 years.
Yeah, and Khalil Mack kind of shut it down, too. When the Bears got bad, he sort of got bored.
Started saving his batteries for a better usage.
Started saving his batteries. Yeah, I mean, he needs to turn into, like, late-career Jared Allen, where the motor's there, he's across from somebody interesting, and he's a 10 or 11 sack a year guy.
Yeah, I mean, basically what Von Miller's done the last couple of years.
Exactly, which is a cool kind of fascinating late career NFL player arc. And I've been watching this ever since Charles Haley was a thing in the 90s and kind of became the pass rushing hired gun for various teams' playoff runs at the end, where Charles Haley would come in on third down and just pin his ears back. And even when he was like in his mid-30s, late 30s, he could still do it really well.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting deal, but I'm not there on San Diego.
Well, San Diego has been the team on the brink for seemingly, I don't know, half a dozen years. Under Philip Rivers, they were always on the brink. You know, they had a couple good years, but never could get over the hump in the playoffs. They consistently lost a ton in December. Bring in Brandon Staley, who was the defensive whiz for the Rams. And last year, their defense was bad and their offense was good. So let's assume their offense stays good, because I don't think they've lost anything there. Nah, they re-signed their key receivers. Their offensive line is solid, et cetera.
Yeah.
If their defense gets decent, because they have talent at every level now, they could be great, but that division is just, just haymakers every Sunday.
It is, man. Yeah, not a lot of easy weeks on that schedule. All right, Pipe, let's do some rapid fire here to close it. Where do you think Baker Mayfield plays? Where do you think he ends up?
I think the Browns are going to be backed into the corner of trading him to somebody. Like, Carolina is probably the best bet for like a sixth round pick.
Yeah, on the cheap. I mean, next to nothing.
Basically the Matt Ryan deal, except that Matt Ryan is probably better than Baker Mayfield at this point, and certainly the Colts situation is better than wherever Baker's going to get traded to. The other option is a team, maybe Seattle. Seattle might be like, they might get into camp and realize that Drew Locke is as bad as everybody else knows that he is.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, we can't do this. So they make a trade for him. But again, like fourth to sixth round pick kind of thing, where the Browns are basically getting off his contract.
Yeah, no, that's right. Matt Ryan to the Colts. How bullish are you on the Colts in light of this move?
Everything about the Colts is solid and boring, which is so bullish. They play in a bad division, and that's their best bet. I think the Matt Ryan move makes a ton of sense for them, because they're good enough elsewhere on the team to be competitive, to possibly win that division. They traded nothing for him. They absorbed a reasonable salary. I think they're paying him like $23-28 million. Atlanta $8-16 million just to get rid of him. Like, that's just on their books because of how they handled their cap. So maybe this is just sunk cost for them, but I like it for the Colts. I think he's the right sort of, can make the occasional play, steady hand, good in the locker room, well respected, and he's going to hand off to Taylor 24 times a game.
Yeah, I like this for them. I really do, especially in a weak division year. I really like it.
I think
for them.
Should go out and sign Julio Jones for like cheap, because it would be really, because they need a receiver, because they only have Pittman right now, really. And Jones is just sitting out there, and I don't know if he's healthy, but it would be really fun to see a Matt Ryan, Julio Jones kind of late career reconnection.
Yeah, and the Colts, they have a history of doing this. They got late career Andre Johnson during the Andrew Luck era, and that was kind of fun at times, so I could get behind that. Last one, who drafts Malik Willis? Because I have a Malik Willis thing that I'm chewing on for the Lions, which is, if I'm the Lions, and I hate doing this, dude, because this goes against everything that I believe in, if I'm the Lions and I'm sitting at number two and the Jags have taken Aiden Hutchinson and I don't need an offensive tackle because offensive tackle is one of the positions that the Lions are strongest in, I might take Malik Willis. Your thoughts? And then where do you think he actually goes?
See, I will forever be scarred by Christian Ponder, which, and what I mean by yeah. that is a team who needs a quarterback reaches for one in the first round because he's one of the best in the draft. But if you compare yeah. him to quarterbacks in any other draft, he's like a third round pick. I think Malik Willis's ceiling is obviously way higher than that. I mean, he could be Russell Wilson for all we know in 3 or 4 yeah. years. But taking him at, I would not take him at number two for all the reasons we talked about earlier. I think if they want Hutchinson and that guy's gone, I think they should try everything they can to trade back to a team who really needs a tackle, pick up something else. Because if they can build that foundation for whatever quarterback they get next year, I think that's the route they should go. Just continue to patiently build this thing. I think Willis would be best going to like the Steelers or Atlanta or one of these teams that has signed
a veteran
guy who everybody knows is not the long-term guy.
That's right.
You know, because you got Mariota in Atlanta, you got Trubisky in Pittsburgh. If he was drafted by Washington, that'd be like another one where they might think Wentz is the long-term guy. Wentz is not the long-term guy.
Right.
And so, but again, if Detroit believes in him and they took him, they can start Goff for the whole year and give him a chance to develop. But that's what I think he needs is that I think Pittsburgh should take him because I think they have the best infrastructure and not as many needs elsewhere to be able to absorb him and just be like, well, nobody's going to see you until next season, but you're going to get a lot better.
Yeah. No, that's right. I like that. Real quick, Pipe, and I got to hop. Do you care about like March Madness at all? And my reason for asking about this is as follows. So we're having some people stay at our house from like Monday through Wednesday next week. And the wife actually reached out to KK and was like, can we watch the game on Monday night? And KK was like, what game? And, dude, I haven't watched 1 minute of college basketball on TV in probably a decade. Like, I can't imagine a thing that I care less about. And now I'm going to have to watch this game with these people. It'll undoubtedly be schools that I don't care about. And
well, you don't care about any of the schools, so that's a real safe bet.
I don't care about any of the schools. I mean, although if it had been that scrappy, like small school with a guy with a mustache,
I could have
gotten behind that.
Was that St. Peter's? But, I think
St. Peter's.
Yeah, that was
a fun deal.
Well, the thing is, it's all like the college blue bloods, you know, Kansas, Duke, North Carolina, et cetera. So it's, I don't care about it. I will probably watch some of the Final Four, which at the time of recording is tomorrow, and then the championship. By the time this releases, y'all will know who the champion of the of college basketball is. There was a time in my life, college and post college especially, where like I would dedicate entire days to it. You know, especially that first Thursday, Friday, and I absolutely loved it. Memories of that are so, but it feels very much like it's like doing a movie marathon. You know, where there's a time and place in life where that's a thing you can carve out and do, where you're going to be like at 8 a.m. to midnight, we're going to watch all the Lord of the Rings or all the James Bond
all
movies.
All the Rockies.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, life doesn't allow for that. And my emotional capacity to pour into sports has gotten smaller. So I have to channel it towards, you know, my team.
You got
to
pick your spots.
Whatever. Also, I really dislike bad basketball and college basketball sucks.
Yeah, it really does. Dude, did you ever have that cool teacher in high school who would like wheel the TV in on the cart and like just have it going on mute in the corner?
Oh, it was it was our football coach who
always. He
was a terrible football coach, but he was a great dude.
And
he would, yeah. So like lunch breaks, or if we could, you know, sneak out of another class, we'd go hang out in his like health class or whatever it was, and watch games on Thursday afternoons.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. That's like my only positive memory of March Madness was that happening. Dude, I want to close with, I picked up a really sneaky good sports book.
Yeah.
And I'm completely like engrossed in this thing, despite it being a sport that I don't really care about. It's the Andre Agassi memoir from like, I don't know, 2009 or 2010. This thing came out and I heard great things about it back then. And I sort of made a mental note like, oh, I need to read that. And then I forgot about it. I ran across it at a book sale, grabbed it. It's fantastic. Have you read it?
I have not, but I remember hearing the same thing. And I, you know, so Andre Agassi was a huge deal when I was like elementary and middle school, like early mid 90s, you know, had the mullet and the flat top. And like, I just remember thinking when the memoir came out, thinking, oh, yeah, I bet that guy has stories to tell.
Yeah. And the writing is spectacular. So the guy that ghost wrote it is this guy, J.P. Moringer, and he wrote a novel called The Tender Bar that they just made a movie
memoir, isn't it?
Yeah, it's his own memoir. Yeah. Right. It's so it's not a novel, okay. Or maybe it was a novelized version of his life.
I think The Tender Bar is his memoir, and supposedly I haven't read it yet, but I just bought it and I'm looking forward to it. I didn't realize he ghost wrote it with Agassi. Yeah, he has a reputation as a phenomenal writer.
Yeah, and this is phenomenally well written. Like, I got a page and a half into it, and I was Googling who ghost wrote this thing. Like, it was that good. Because I knew Agassi didn't do it, and it had to be somebody, like, really legitimate. And it was. So as a ghostwriter, it's kind of an interesting aspirational thing for me, where I'm just like, man, this is this done at a really high level. And it makes some interesting choices in terms of ghostwriting, in that Moringer didn't seem very concerned with like even making it sound like Agassi.
Mm-hmm.
But it totally didn't matter to me. I'm like, this is just a really good read. I don't care whose voice I'm listening to because it's just a good book.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It made some interesting like ghostwriting choices to me, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it. You should check it out.
Yeah. I probably will. I have, I just tried to read one that was like the exact opposite. It wasn't a memoir. It was a bio, and it was of Satchel Paige, who, you know, who by reputation is like one of the most interesting athletes ever in terms of personality, right? Larger than life. There's just stories about him, you know, telling all his outfielders to sit down. He's going to strike out the side.
Yeah.
And it was the most boring, dry, like, and in this season, he struck out 127 and won.
Oh, dude,
and it was written by a guy you could tell doesn't understand baseball, because like he doesn't use baseball lingo. He tries to turn the lingo into everyman language. I'm like, the only people who are going to read Satchel Paige books know what 21-4 means.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
We know what an ERA of 1.85 is. You don't need to tell us. Now, compared to the league, that's exceptional. Like, what are we talking? Like, what are we trying to explain this to grandma? And so don't read Satchel by Larry Tye, listeners. I'm going to give you the opposite recommendation of Ted. Go read the Agassi biography and find yourself, or memoir, and be much happier.
Absolutely. A lot of fun, as was this podcast, Pipe. We've done what we always do, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout some NFL player moves. We got to do an NFL draft, either preview or recap. I've taken like a very deep tumble into offensive line tape this year. I've got
is
so many
different
offensive
than any
line
previous
tape.
Year.
Not really, but there were more guys to look at this year, and I've just been going crazy on it. And I love some of these guys, and I want to talk O line. So maybe that'll be the next pod.
Why don't we plan to do like a baseball season preview? Because that, you know, we kind of haven't talked about it because it's been so thrown off with the whole lockout and barely any spring training. Why don't we do one of those, and then let's do a draft recap.
Love it, dude. I need like a week to get my baseball legs underneath me, and then I'll be
well. You got about a week until games start, so hit the ground running.
Perfect. Pipe, we've done what we always do, and until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. Be sure to visit thehappyrant.com to check out our merchandise, learn more about upcoming live events, and listen to past episodes.
In a world where relationships are easily broken and often discarded, the Rebuilding Us Marriage Podcast is your lighthouse, guiding the way to hope, restoration, and transformation in Christ. I'm your host and marriage coach, Dana Shea. Join me as we discuss the necessary tools for rebuilding marriages from adversity, betrayal, and disconnection. It's time to reignite love as we rebuild marriages from the ground up. Listen to the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.